The Accidental Entrepreneur is brought to you through our affiliate relationships with the following sponsors: Digital Accelerant, the digital mobile business card that generates leads. Text the word LAW to 21,000 to get connected and learn how to get your own digital business card. And by Fetch Internet and Fetch Pro, the secure, high-speed app that eliminates the need to pay for hotspots or use public unsecure Wi-Fi. And Printify, the online, on-demand print shop for all your corporate merchandise. Be sure to visit our online store and get your own podcast merch. Listen to all of our sponsors' commercials later in this episode and follow their links in the show notes to learn more about their products and services.
Getting that marketing element of those stores right is one of the key factors to success. You know, you can have the greatest product in the world, but if you give crappy customer service, people are never coming back. Right. You can have the greatest location in the world and a great product, but if nobody knows you're there, then you're just, you know, a place with the lights on. So right. When you combine them all and you get them all right, then you get runaway successes. You know, Warby Parker is a good example of that.
Yeah, no, they definitely. And you, and I hadn't heard of them till I heard them on a, I think on a podcast, like How I Built This, you know, one of the business podcasts. And the next thing you know, I see an ad, and next thing you know, I see it's coming soon. I'm like, well, they have retail. I thought that was the whole thing, was that they're not, that they're not on in retail location. Now, have you found that like landlords are more open, especially nowadays, to, you know, those kind of short-term pop-up type of leases, or
The whole landlord landscape has really changed, probably in the last 3 or 4 years, and not just because of COVID. I mean, just because of, you know, brick and mortar retail in general. The I've been describing it this year as at one point, you know, pop-up retailing was seen as this adolescent that just caused people problems, and so we're happy to accept it. But if you make, you know, you cause us problems, we're gonna kick you out.
Right.
But and now all of a sudden, you know, pop-up retail is the adult in the room, right. And you can go into a mall in New Jersey, you can come to one here in Chicago, you can go to California, you know, you can go to Arizona, and they all look the bloody same.
Yeah.
Right. Same retail mix, probably the architecture is very, very similar, and so on. And as consumers, we become really, really sophisticated about the way that we shop, because we've got online, because we've got instant access. So right. we want to be entertained. We want to have an experience. And that's what pop-up retailing does for the landlord.
The information provided in these episodes is for entertainment purposes only. It is not a guarantee of success or to be construed as advice of any kind. You should always seek advice from local licensed professionals before making any decisions.
The dictionary defines an entrepreneur as a person who organizes and manages any enterprise, especially a business, usually with considerable initiative and risk. People often start a business without much choice, perhaps due to a job loss or just being dissatisfied at work, and they come up with an idea they just know can be successful. They become entrepreneurs by accident. That is to say, their success or failure happens by accident, not with intention. My name is Mitch Beinhacker. I'm a corporate attorney and a business advisor. You're listening to The Accidental Entrepreneur, my podcast about how to achieve success on purpose, not by accident. Join me along with our monthly guests, where we share our knowledge and help you get a hold of your business. And now on to today's episode. Just to remind you, the podcast is produced and brought to you by my legal practice, Beinhacker Law. We provide business and estate services to entrepreneurs, inventors, and other small business owners. Whether you're just getting started or you've been operating for a long time, contact us for all your general legal needs, from contracts to client agreements, from purchasing a new location to onboarding a new partner or key employee. We draft all types of agreements and handle most business transactions. For more information about our products and services, visit BeinhackerLaw.com, or you can follow our link in the show notes. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed today's interview.
Hi, this is Steve Brooks. I'm the pop-up retail expert. I'm originally from London, now living in Chicago, and here to talk about everything that's pop-up.
All right, Steve. So thanks for coming on the show. I think did we connect through like one of those sites, Podmatch or Podcast Guests or FM?
We did Podmatch, which is a great site.
It is a good site. Yeah, definitely. Definitely a good site. All right. So I told you we had talked off mic about pop-ups and the pop-up retail business, but maybe we go back into your background a little bit in marketing and business and all that type of stuff. And then we'll get into pop-up retail and what other people can learn about it.
Yeah, yeah, sure. I guess I thought I was going to be an entrepreneur when I was about six or seven, sitting outside my grandfather's house selling yesterday's newspapers to passers-by, which isn't an easy task.
And literally yesterday's newspapers, like they're dated?
Literally, they were the day before yesterday's newspapers, right? And when I ran in with a bag full of pennies and showed my grandfather, he was really annoyed with me because I'd been selling papers that he wanted to keep for whatever reason.
And B, he
was then quite shocked because he was, how on earth did you manage to sell them? So I guess I maybe had that entrepreneurial spirit quite early on.
Okay.
Left school, went to work for a bank for 6 months, absolutely hated it. And so I did the next best thing. I left there and I went to work for an insurance company.
Oh, that's even better.
And that was just as exciting. And so I knew that that's not what I wanted to do. And I managed to get an interview for a retail management training scheme with a now defunct retailer called FW Woolworth. Maybe listening will remember good old Woolies.
They had a big, in my town, if you look at old pictures from the 40s and 50s and even the 30s, there was a big Woolworths on the main street.
Yeah. It was kind of like the second or third biggest retailer in the UK when I joined them, and turned up on the first day, suited and booted, back in the day when people wore suits for management training programs and all of that, and ties.
Now, Steve, was Woolworths a British company?
No.
They're an American company.
The Hutton family, I believe, was the original owners.
Oh, like E.F. Hutton, like that, the financial company?
Yeah, I believe so. Something like that.
Okay, we'll have to look that up. Okay.
Yeah. Let us know. So turned up suited and booted first day, got sent to the stockroom for like 4 months to learn the business literally from the ground up. And as a very good friend of mine, Ron Thursden, says, that's how I found my way into an accidental career of retail, and stayed with them for a number of years, moved into selling, kind of B2B selling, was headhunted by a guy that was starting this new business that was selling space behind the checkouts of big box stores. So kind of like Home Depots and Menards, and our equivalent is something called B&Q or, at the time, we had a business called Texas Home Care, believe it or not. And I had some kind of elements that fitted. I had a sales background. I understood retail. And within 6 months or so of joining him, he decided he wanted to move back to Scotland, which is where he came from. His wife was missing home. So, you know, he was going to try and run the business remotely. And this is like, you know, in the very, very early days of mobile phones, very, very early days of the internet and email.
We weren't as connected as we are now.
No, not nearly as connected. Right. And 6 months after that, he was like, do you want to buy the company? And so I literally sold everything I had. I borrowed some money from some relations and I bought the business off of it.
Now, this was, let me make sure I understand. This was selling, like if you go into a big store, there was retail space near the checkout, like those kiosks and the different, and you were filling those, like that was your display, and then you would sell space and you would rent it from the store. What was the model there?
Yeah. So actually it was a really cool business model, because if we didn't rent the space, we didn't have to pay for it. So we started out with, I think it was about 15 or 20 stores, and within 6 months we had like the whole estate for what was called B&Q, which was at the time, I think about 350 stores across the country. But we were selling them to people like double glazing companies and garage door companies. If anybody remembers a financial services business called Allied Dunbar, Encyclopedia Britannica.
Was
another client, obviously.
Some people don't even know what an encyclopedia is.
No, exactly right. And that was in the days, you know, when they were selling the actual volume.
Door to door. They would sell the book, the world book, the yearbook. I remember
that. That's it. Yeah.
So, Steve, what kind of items were being sold then? Were they like gum and things like that? What was being sold?
Oh, no. So we were selling the space to these like third party businesses.
Oh, I see.
They were talking to customers as they came through, qualifying the lead, setting appointments and all of that sort of stuff. We used to sell vending space, which was a kind of different sale anyway.
Yeah.
So, you know, like you see, you know, snacks and drinks.
So how did you make your money then on that model?
So we had given the individual location a kind of value for the space in our opinion. And then we just added a margin to it, you know, 25% okay. margin. And okay. I'll be honest, the business was a cash cow. You know, it was we would get paid up front. We had 30 days terms on paying the actual retailer. You know, then this is back in the day when actually you could put the revenue in your account on overnight with your bank and you know, grab some interest from it as well.
Yeah.
In small volumes. So grew that, sold it, and then you know, grew and started some other businesses in kind of similar veins. Mm-hmm. And you know, at one point we were looking after all of the major DIY chains in the UK. We were looking after a business called Macro, which is like kind of Costco here, the kind okay. of European version. And then through, you know, buying and selling those businesses, moved into shopping centres, and that's where the kind of expertise of pop-up retailing started. At one point, I had a couple of Apple Premium reseller stores. I had a PR company. We had a manufacturing company for kiosks and retail merchandise units all at the same time. And kind of then, you know, kind of took a step back and realized that, you know, 7 days a week, 19 hours a day
yeah,
probably
sure.
wasn't a really great way to live my life.
Popping and, up means it's got to pop down at some point, right?
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. Yeah. And you know, I was flying all over the world. I've been lucky enough to work in 57 different countries with, you know, using this expertise and speaking and writing books and doing media. So these days it's far more focused on a small number of clients, working with malls, mall landlords and mall owners.
Right.
I sit on the board of a couple of businesses as an advisor in the kind of retail sector. And have created this kind of, I know we talk about lifestyle businesses. I'm actually still working harder than I probably was then those times. But I've got this joy and energy for it, which really just
right?
sustains yeah. me. And that you're absolutely right. That's yeah. the fundamental difference.
We all work very hard, but if we enjoy what we do, then it's more of a.
Yeah, it just comes. Like you say, it's a better lifestyle. You're happier.
Right.
And I think that transmits through when you're working with clients and you know, you don't have to deal with as many people and you're not, you know, you don't have a big team around you. So,
yeah.
You know, I'm a big believer now in, you know, you find experts that you can use and you plug into them when you need them. And then,
sure.
you know, you unplug them when you don't need them.
Yeah, me too. I do the same thing from a law firm standpoint. I don't need all these people working for me. I have colleagues that can plug in and jump in when I need
them. Yeah. Yeah, exactly right.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, generally the way that, if you like, consultancy is moving, you know, unless you're an Andersons or somebody like that, of course.
Right.
It's got huge infrastructures. But, you know, pop-up retailing has been around since the beginning of time. So it's not like, you know, it's anything new. We just used to call it souks and bazaars and markets. But it's the foundation of retailing. And so I feel very blessed. I've been very fortunate to fall into this accidental career that I love.
Yeah. So when I think of pop-up retailing, right, and I'm sure mm-hmm. this is wrong, it's much broader than this, but you know, you think of like the Supreme company is doing a collab with the sneaker company and they're doing a pop-up van somewhere in New York City. And all the kids go and they line up and they, you know, and they go crazy and get the stuff. But pop-up retailing kind of just means you don't have a permanent location, right? I mean,
correct.
With the exception of food trucks, I don't know. Does that count as pop-up retailing?
Actually, in a form, it absolutely does. Yeah, food trucks is pop-up retailing. I mean, you've got, you know, you've got pop-up restaurants,
right?
So it's no different. But you're absolutely right. You know, it's short term. It's focused. It's not permanent.
Right.
But it's also not just retailing products, you know, like I was saying about those early days with working with B&Q and working with service businesses, you know, it works equally as well for them, whether you're a motor dealer or a real estate agent It, you know, it works for credit card companies. It works for solar energy companies.
Right.
And if you develop the right strategy, you know, you can grow a business incredibly quickly. You know, we've grown businesses from one location to over 100 in less than 18 months.
It's not just like a large corporation using the method as a marketing strategy to pop up somewhere and promote. That is a strategy, right? But we're obviously focusing on small business here. So it is a way for you to maybe not have permanent brick and mortar, right? And still be able to do retailing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a number of things. It's a great way to test before you invest, of course.
Well, so if
you
do want a permanent location. That's a big thing that people miss. Right. Absolutely.
Exactly. That's a huge, huge part of the market.
That's
it's a great way for you to, A/B test a product or you know, those sorts of things. Great way for moving over inventoried products. I mean, particularly coming out of COVID,
right.
You know, using a pop-up, maybe not in your town or your state. So it's not just impacting your other
inventory
sales.
Inventory and stuff like that.
Yeah. It's a great mechanism for that. What's happened kind of the end of last year and certainly all through this is online brands are now coming out and using it as a mechanism for growing as well. So
like they don't want a permanent retail platform or footprint, but they're willing to jump in and out of the market.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly right. Yeah.
The great method.
It's superb. Superb.
Yeah.
And you know, everybody talks about online retailing is killing, you know, is killing brick and mortar. You know, Amazon have seven different retail formats.
Yeah,
brick and mortar.
They do now, right.
Right. So, you know, if those guys are investing in it, you know that it's the right way to go. You know, we're working with some really young brands. We're working with some really established brands. But there's no better way of connecting with the consumer. 78% of people still want to touch, feel, and engage with the product.
These glasses are Warby Parker.
There you go.
Online, you know, and then they opened in my town. And I'm like, wow, they're going into retail.
Yeah.
I think it's more of a pendulum, right? I think it swings depending on your development and the industry you're in, your trajectory, right? Amazon obviously they have a lot of money, but, you know, obviously there's risks to being in retail and there's risks to not having locations, right? Customer risk and so forth. So I think, as you grow your model, then you decide, well, which way are we going to go with this? Are we going to do it temporarily? Are we going to do it permanently? Are we going to do some of both, right? We can have pop-up locations and maybe one main location and 60% of our business. I mean, there's you know, Gary Vaynerchuk, right? So the media mogul. So he started with his dad's liquor store in 2-3 towns over from me. His dad had a little local liquor store. It was a tiny store. And now it's called the Wine Library. It's this enormous building. He started selling online. He's also very good at marketing. And, you know, one fed off the other. Now he's got this big, you know, media company, but the business, the wine business itself is huge. And it was kind of, you know, one playing off the other, but you can only grow. I think that's a good example of a local, you know, retail business. You can only grow so big, you know, online obviously is going to grow it a lot more.
But there are still constraints to that as well. You know, I mean, if you're a young emerging online fashion brand, for instance, there's if you start to build them, you know, I'm working with some here in Chicago that you've got that core element of customers that want to buy from you. All of a sudden, you know, you take that out on the road and you do a pop-up shop and all these guys are bringing their friends along and all of a sudden, you know, you just doubled your customer base. And you know, all the stuff that Vaynerchuk is doing in terms of social media is one of the key elements of making pop-up shops really successful.
Right. Portion of it, right? Where people get excited and post things. It almost makes it more viable now with social media than it was before.
Oh, yeah.
Because I guess before that, how does word spread? You tell your friends? I don't know.
Yeah. You tell your friends, you put up a few posters. You know, you hope maybe you can get some time on local radio or local TV because it's something different. A lot harder. I mean, now you know you got a television station in your hand. So off you go. You know, doing lives. So taking people on that journey, and that's the other than the location and the people, getting that marketing element of those stores right is one of the key factors to success. You know, you can have the greatest product in the world, but if you give crappy customer service, people are never coming back. You can have the greatest location in the world and a great product. But if nobody knows you're there, then you're just, you know, a place with the lights on. So right. when you combine them all and you get them all right, then you get runaway successes. You know, Warby Parker is a good example of that.
Yeah, no, they definitely. And you, and I hadn't heard of them till I heard them on a, I think on a podcast, like How I Built This, you know, one of those, one of the business podcasts. And the next thing you know, I see an ad, and next thing you know, I see it's coming soon. I'm like, well, they have retail. I thought that was the whole thing, was that they're not, you know, that they're not on in retail location. Okay. Now, have you found that like landlords are more open, especially nowadays, to, you know, those kind of short-term pop-up type of leases or?
I mean, the whole landlord landscape has really changed probably in the last 3 or 4 years, and not just because of COVID. I mean, just just because of, you know, brick and mortar retail in general. The I've been describing it this year as at one point, you know, pop-up retailing was seen as this adolescent that just caused people problems, and so we're happy to accept it, but if you make, you know, you cause us problems, we're gonna kick you out.
Right.
But and now all of a sudden, you know, pop-up retail is the adult in the room. Right. And you can go into a mall in New Jersey, you can come to one here in Chicago, you can go to California, you know, you can go to Arizona, and they all look the bloody same.
Yeah.
Right? Same retail mix, probably the architecture is very, very similar, and so on. And as consumers, we become really, really sophisticated about the way that we shop because we've got online, because we've got instant access. So right. we want to be entertained. We want to have an experience. And that's what pop-up retailing does for the landlord. You know, it makes it interesting. Now there's something different. You know, it's not just right. those same retailers. And when you mix that in with, you know, doing some experiential stuff on the mall areas, common areas, or you right. get a couple of car dealerships in, or you put on a fashion show or whatever that might be. Now, all right. of a sudden, you know, you've got an experience rather than just people going to the mall.
Right.
And that's what they're after.
Well, because they mean, want people coming in and seeing their other tenants and seeing the things that are going on, right? Of course.
Absolutely. Benefits everybody. Now, listen, we're going to lose 25% of the malls in the US in the next 3 to 5 years anyway.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. But just because of, you know, they're either outdated or, you know, they've been taken, you know, there's a bigger mall that's more successful.
Yeah.
You know, with the demise of lots of department store brands and so on, so anchor tenants have been lost.
Seems like the malls are going to be more high-end, more very expensive brands, people that want to go shop right there, they can't wait, you know, it's not going to be that's what I'm seeing, at least in New Jersey.
Yeah, I think the geography of that plays a big part. You're absolutely right. But what you're seeing from smart landlords is a couple of things. You know, you've got people like Simon Malls, one of the biggest in the country.
Yeah, they have a couple of malls here too. Yeah,
Brookfield investing in retailers.
Yeah,
you know, so that's a really smart move. But then you're also seeing landlords going, okay, why don't we build our own ecosystem around that? So we've got this real estate. Why don't we convert some of this into residential? And why don't we convert some of this into better entertainment and medical and so on? So
like
now
you communities. Almost.
Yeah. So you have, you've got these kind of, you know, mini ecosystems that are kind of supporting, and then people are still coming to them. So I think that's the innovations that you're going to see certainly from landlords, but it's the beauty, I think, of retail right now is it has decided it needs to evolve, right?
Oh yeah,
it's been a dinosaur. There's right, no two ways around it. And right. COVID kind of, you know, poked it in the belly and said, you know, you better pull your finger out. That's a very English expression, by the way. and you better do something about this. And so we had that innovation of click and collect and curbside pickup at malls and all of those sorts of things. And then there's been a lot of advances in kind of back-end technology, logistics and inventory management.
Very much so. Yeah.
But front-facing consumer, there hasn't been nearly as much. So when you get the innovation of you know, what mobile phones can do, and then you can start to interact with them, and you can, you know, you can walk past displays and get messages and play videos, and you can track all, you know, that interaction. So that starts to then give the retailers all this exciting information that they can use to make the experience better. And that's just not in mainstream retail. You can use that in pop-up retailing as well.
Right. Yeah. I think that the whole COVID thing that's happened in the last year and a half or whatever really kind of pushed that along the way with the small business owner, where maybe larger companies had applications you can use on your phone. They would give you points. It didn't do that much. They obviously jumped on right away because they already had an app. But even local small shops, retail, could now, you know, create an app pretty inexpensively, and people could order stuff. It's funny. I see like the clothing business or those kinds of businesses where they're going to have very little inventory. You're going to go to the store because maybe you do want to try things on or see how they look or feel the material. And it's going to arrive at your house like before you get home, and you're just from another location, you know, logistically.
Yeah. I mean, we're not that far away from that at all. And that's the other thing, the exciting thing about online brands, you know, coming out into the marketplace, is that if you use technology properly, like you say, you can have, you know, a few select pieces. And then from there, you know, if there's something that you like, here's our full catalog. And before you know where it is, like, it's, you know, you either bring them back to the store to collect it, which landlords love because that's another visit, or it's drop shipped direct to home, as you say, you know, next day, or if depending on the merchant, you know, maybe the same day even.
Well, I've noticed a lot of the retailers, Walmart, Target, even Home Depot, there's a lot of stuff they don't have in the store that they do keep available through wherever. I don't know, warehouse. No,
absolutely. Target and Walmart are probably some of the best examples of that integration of technology and consumer interaction. But other retailers, you really need to follow suit with that, you know. And it's actually, you know, the small guys, the pop-up guys, that are driving that as well. That we've been saying for a long time, coming out of COVID, that actually, you know, local is the new global, right? Because you know, there was this immense desire from people to eat locally, you know, shop locally as much as they can during the pandemic, create communities online, you know, with Facebooks and apps and all of that sort of stuff. And so I don't think you're going to see in the coming years massive brands grow, you know, in the way that traditionally they might have done. But you will see some of these online brands kind of, you know, occupy three or four states and become quite
micro brands.
Yeah, quite a sustainable business. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Here's a word from our sponsors. Uplift your marketing and reinforce your brand with a digital business card from Digital Accelerant. Use a text marketing combination to stand out in front of your competition. Digital business cards make you memorable and most of all help you bring in new business through its warm lead generator. Motion graphics, intro, outro, and inspirational videos can be added during setup. Text the word LAW to 21000, that's L-A-W to 21000, to learn how to get your own digital business card. Suffering from slow internet speed? Worried about hackers? Fetch Pro gets the internet from your smartphone to your Windows and Mac computer without paying for a hotspot. Always get the fastest, most stable, and secure internet access on your computer with Fetch Pro. Follow their affiliate link on our website to learn more and get connected with Fetch. Printify is the online service that simplifies and automates the process of sourcing and creating print-on-demand products branded with your company logo, product, or service. Printify is a better alternative to pre-purchasing and warehousing your merchandise for distribution or sale. Follow their link from our website to learn how to set up your own online store. And be sure to visit our online store and get yourself some podcast merch. Follow the link in the show notes to learn more about all of our sponsors. And now back to our show.
Exactly.
Well, I think, you know, back, I don't know, 40, 50 years ago, it was probably even more so that, because the world wasn't connected. So the brands were very local. You go up to Maine with your family and you drink soda that you never saw any other parts of the country. And then you go home, try and look for it. Now you can order it online. They'll ship it to you.
Yeah, no, exactly right. Right. You know, but I mean, that's the great thing about the time that we live in. I mean, you've got all of this free access to things that you can, you know, the internet and social media and all of these things, but you've got access to things that you'd never even dreamed of. And the clever people are bringing those out into the retail space, which is absolutely lovely. One of the really interesting things that's happening in the marketplace is actually micro activations, micro pop-ups, which are kind of like 3 or 4 hours. So an online brand or something says, we have this product at this price.
Like and it's going to be in this location. Basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's the stuff I was mentioning to you when they have, you know, whatever's doing a Krispy Kreme's doing a thing with a sneaker company. And they you don't get there by 11, everything's gone and closed down.
It's gone.
Exactly. Yeah, the kids and the kids get very excited about it. And social media obviously drives all that kind of stuff. Yeah. That's smart marketing, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And it works for small, medium, large brands, you know, right across the spectrum. So, you know, there's a business out in the UK called Souq, which is obviously an old name for markets. And, you know, their environment is fully digital. So you can take your online buying experience, upload it to their platform, have this micro activation for a few hours. You know, they've had people queuing around the block for some products just because of the way that we're all connected and so on. The other lovely innovation
That's a brick and mortar location?
Yeah, brick and mortar location.
So you can like rent a couple hours, pop up, and then take it down and leave. It's like an indoor market type of a thing.
Well, it stays there permanently. But they reckon that
the pop-ups change.
But the pop-ups just change. Yeah, change all the time. They even had somebody rent one of them recently to propose to his girlfriend.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah,
that's actually a cute idea.
It's really nice. Yeah. One of the other lovely things that's happening in the world of pop-up is there's a lot of collaboration going on as well. Okay. So you are bringing together smaller brands into one space.
Right.
And that's great for the consumer because they're not competing. They might be in the same kind of neighborhood, let's say streetwear, for instance, but you've got somebody doing hoodies and somebody's doing T-shirts and somebody's doing hats and someone's doing sneakers and all of that. And that makes for a great, great shopping experience as well. So when you then start to get people to do that, there's another mechanism for growing that process, you know, a lot more. So that's really exciting.
Yeah, I think collaborations are something that a lot of businesses, especially small businesses, can benefit from when they look around and they say, you know what? Steven's not really my competitor. He's my friend and he's outside. Yeah. Maybe we can do something together. I think a lot of people during pandemic kind of, you know, I know there's some restaurants that weren't open in the mornings and the coffee guy near the train station wasn't getting any business. Nobody's going to the city on the train. So he says, well, why don't you know, he's shut down. Why don't you come to my place in the morning and you can serve coffee and then we do lunch. And there was a lot of that collaboration, you know, going on. And I guess you could do it from a pop-up basis too, because then you create kind of a buzz about whatever it is that you're bringing to the marketplace. Right. I mean, that's one of the goals.
Yeah. And it becomes interesting for the customer.
You know, more exciting for the customer.
Something changing. Yeah, absolutely. You know,
So if I'm a small business owner, what kind of, because I know a lot of the work you do right now is like you consult with large corporations, right, that are using pop-up as a strategy. Mm-hmm. What is kind of advice that you give to small people if I have a small business that I could take advantage of and I should think about, let's say, in the pop-up retail, you know, marketplace?
Sure.
Example.
Look, the first thing is there's never been a better opportunity to do it, right? And you know, the kind of signs that you're ready for that are, A, you want to grow your business and you think you've taken it as far as you can, maybe online, or you think that you've got the one location, but you really can't decide about a second location. If you're having those thoughts, you should be doing a pop-up, right? If you've got people online asking you where you've got a retail environment, you should definitely be doing a pop-up. And if you're seeing people doing pop-ups and think, I could do that and I could probably do it better, you absolutely should be doing it. We have a program called the 7 Secrets to Success that we kind of take people through small businesses. Mm-hmm. And that goes from location at one end to planning at the other and everything in between. So, you know, just like buying a home, it's location, location, location. Amazing customer service, social media, merchandising, connecting with the customer. Obviously marketing and then your planning. So we take them through a whole process about how to do that. The other thing that certainly I spend a lot of time doing is busting the myth about pop-up retailing as well, because everybody thinks they see big boys doing it. And they think it must, if these guys are doing it, it's got to be expensive. It's not.
Right. It's not. There's ways to do it inexpensive.
You can find pop-up locations. You can find hotels that do pop-up locations for, you know, $150 for a weekend. You can find good malls where you could probably rent around 1,500 square feet for less than $2,000 a month.
Oh, okay.
It's not because a lot of money.
Because it's available and it's extra money.
It's available. Well, yeah, and it's now part of their business program. And that's the other shift that landlords are doing. So if you think, you know, they're just interested in a kind of cash and grab and, right. you know, there's your store, get on with it. Now landlords and the guys that work in the malls are investing time into these businesses as well and taking them through like we do, taking them through understanding how to be a retailer, you right. know, how to give amazing customer service, how to cross sell and upsell, you know, how to be authentic. 64% of people will return to a store and seek out the sales associate that they spoke to previously if they went away with a great product and great advice. So, you know, the more your team is educated and trained, the more they kind of buy into the brand, the better your business will be. And that goes for, you know, any business on the planet as far as I'm concerned. So, you know, we try and teach those things as well. We offer advice around, you know, merchandising and obviously, you know, there are some do's and don'ts as far as, for me, I don't think you ever want to have a pop-up store near entrance or exit doors. You never want to have a pop-up near bathrooms.
No, well, but definitely not near, why not near entrance or exits? Because of the noise or this?
Well,
or that?
No, because people are either coming or going. Right,
oh, right. And they're not stopping.
They're not stopping. If you look at the majority of exit and entrance doors, they tend nowadays to be food or a service. So like a nail bar or somebody that does pedicures or an eyebrow threading place. So because, you know, it's kind of a destination thing. If you're right. a retailer, people are either in the mall because we're after something or we've got our shopping, we've got our kids, we're heading back to the car.
Right.
So
you're done.
We try and bring those things into play. I'm a big believer in actually, you know, popping up in the midst of things that have got nothing to do with you as well, because that makes you stand out. But, you know, sometimes it's an advantage to be in a line with ladies' fashion, or it's an advantage to be with all the home care goods. Me, I like to lean the other way with that. There's a great book I would recommend people reading. It's called Pink Goldfish. And it's about marketing strategies. They have an acronym called FLAWSOM, which is all about flaunting your business and playing to your weaknesses and doing something they called lopsiding. So if everybody's going this way, you go that
way.
Right,
you're different, so you stand out.
Yeah, so you stand out. And hence Pink Goldfish, because they really do stand out.
They definitely do.
And so, you know, we try and help with that. We develop marketing strategies for our clients. And that way, you know, we help them grow. You know, as I said, we've helped businesses go global from a pop-up perspective.
Right, but you consult. Well, so you're not bringing a team in and setting up the pop-up for them.
No. They do that. We'll advise them. We'll show them where to do it. And, you know, 30, 35 years plus in the business, you know, there's a lot of people, you know, go and ring this guy because he can do that for you. You need, you know, fixtures. Go and talk to this guy. He'll get that right. for you. That's part of what we're doing. You know, that just bringing people together and showing them the way. I love it.
Yeah. And I think your comments about retail landlords in the malls, I think that they are realizing that they do better with successful tenants than, you know, well, but in the past years ago, landlords weren't so concerned about that. They're like, well, I'm the landlord. I own the real estate. I'll always make money. And now the world's become a different kind of a place. And they're realizing that, hey, I really would like to keep these tenants and I do want them to all be successful. Yeah. It's worth it to them. Yeah.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And there is you're right. There is a shift in that, which is good. The lease terms are shortening as well. And that's good as well, because I think, you know, from a landlord perspective, that gives them an opportunity to renegotiate a lot sooner than they might have done.
It depends on the environment, right? You want to lock in a 20-year lease and then find out you're half the market. Every time I go to the mall, everything shifted around. I get to a store and I look at the door and I go, this isn't the store that was here before. Yeah. And I got to go find it. Or maybe it's not even there. The Apple store keeps moving all over the mall. I don't know what the deal is with them.
Biggest space. bigger space.
I'm sure it's issues about rent and stuff like that. So let's talk about pop-ups and how exciting they are, whatever. Mm-hmm. How about some crazy stories and things that people have tried that didn't work? Do you have any stories to share
things that haven't worked? I can tell you things that we've been asked if they could do.
Okay.
Very, very early on back in the UK, we had somebody approach us that wanted to do children's knitted clothes, kind of woolen knitted clothes.
Yeah.
And we were like, that's quite interesting. That could be quite good. What's your inventory like? How big? I can only make two or three a day.
A little rocking chair and she could just sit there and do it.
I mean, we haven't had like that many crazy things. I mean, crazy people for sure. Yeah. Some great characters. One of my all-time favorite individuals was a guy that we worked with in the UK that had a light bulb shop.
That's all they sold was light bulbs,
and it's not the most interesting product in the world. And the business had been going for a few years, and the guy was kind of, a bit grey and sallow, and was thinking, maybe I should get out of the business and so on. And he was referred to us, and he was like, I'm thinking of getting out of the business, might want to liquidate the stock. What's the best way? And we're like, we'll devise a pop-up strategy for you.
This was before LEDs and stuff like that. So kind of light bulb.
They came in, yellow or white, and that was it, 60 or 100 watt.
That's funny.
And so we said, let's just take you out into the public. He was in a small, his own store that was, off a high street. So he didn't get a lot of passing traffic. And so we devised a strategy for him in a shopping mall, and he followed it to the letter. I mean, he literally took every piece of advice we gave him and executed it, 110%.
Okay.
And 5 years on from when he did his first one, he was still doing them. He was doing them.
I thought he was retiring. You said he was.
He was. That was it. He was looking to get out of the business. He was doing them kind of 12 times a year. He developed other products around doing his pop-up. So he started doing little tool sets and torches and flashlights kind of little other allied products. He got himself a website. And then when he wasn't in the mall, he was driving traffic to his own store. And this guy that I said was quite gray and sallow the first day I met him, 5 years on, was kind of reinvigorated and happy and was taking holidays and all of those sorts of things. So, it can really affect people's lives, which is fabulous. But I think, when you work in any business, you have that opportunity to do that.
So, right. Well, I think you're right. It doesn't happen itself, right? You don't open your doors and you do get complacent after a while. That's a lot of problems with small businesses. They get older and they're like, well, what am I going to do? And they want to sell the business. Then somebody comes, buys the business, and it's going gangbusters. And you're like, but it's because of, like you said, marketing and awareness and excitement and doing different things. And I mean, even the podcast, I'm always looking to do now. Once we hit about 200 episodes, now we're working on like series. We're going to do like a craft brewery series. We're going to do like a distillery series. We're going to do like a minority owned business series and a location. Like I was down in Key West recently. I said, oh, I should do a series on like the businesses of Key West, because I want to keep it interesting for me and for people.
Absolutely. But isn't that just one of the like the technological advancements that we've got, where you can do that? You don't have to be in New Jersey. You can go, I'm gonna go down to Florida for a month, and I'm gonna create a little studio, and I'll have
like the ultimate pop up business, right?
Exactly.
I could go to a bar and pop up, set up my equipment, and be sitting there with the local, talking non-location live on, I guess, I don't know, Facebook or something.
Facebook Live, Instagram Live, whatever.
Yeah.
And I think that's the exciting part of retailing, that you have that opportunity as well to be able to do that.
Yeah. So, no, I think it's an interesting world that we're living in now, and we're able to connect with people all over the world. I mean, really connect, not like, pen pal writing a letter, you get the letter, write it, send it back. This is like you know, I've met people during the pandemic. I have friends in London now. We have a group on Fridays, not this Friday, we do every other week, where there's people from Europe and England and from the United States, and we're all mm-hmm. connected. Yeah. All friends. We haven't met each other in person.
No. You know, I have a client in Dubai right now that we're doing work here in the US. I had an inquiry yesterday from Australia because they want to do some work here in the US. So, you don't have to travel as much as maybe, you know, you once did, although I know a lot of us are feeling we're missing the travel bug, but I'm sure once we're back in it, we'll be thinking, let's go back to Zoom meetings again instead of being held up at airports. And
well, I told you I was in Florida last week.
Yeah.
The airports were packed.
Mm.
And even down in Florida, nobody's really leaving the country. So, all the destinations within the borders are very, you know, busy. And then you get these outbreaks and, you know, we came back, we had a COVID test, we're all clean. But the day before I left, I had a closing and it still hasn't closed yet. The guy tested positive. He was away on vacation with his family, whatever. And he still, maybe because of the Delta variant, his viral count is so high that he's still testing positive 10 days later.
God.
And he can't get to the bank to do his wire or whatever it is to finish this transaction. He's okay because he had the vaccine, but
sure.
he did get it. So it's interesting. Look, that's how we connected, because of social media and now how do a lot of people find you, like the people from Dubai, the people from Australia? Is it
sure.
through social media or
LinkedIn? I get a lot of stuff come through LinkedIn, as you probably appreciate. I do some television from time to time for the TD Ameritrade Network. Mm-hmm. So people find me on there. I'm all over social media in terms of Instagram and Twitter and right. Facebook and so on. So you can find me on there. Clubhouse, you know, we do Clubhouses.
Big nowadays.
Love that. A great way of kind of talking to people and spreading the word. I actually do love people picking up the phone and just talking to me.
Yeah.
People can reach me at steve@thepopupexpert.com. I mean, that's primarily the channels that work for me. I'm linked with a lot of retail networks, of course. And I'm getting back to speaking again, which I absolutely love.
In-person speaking.
Yeah.
Legs and you got to wear pants.
Yeah. And I'm when I'm on stage, I'm pretty animated as well. So I'm kind of all over the place.
Yeah, you work the room. I like doing that.
Which I love. So
But it's the same thing, right? If you want to have a thriving business, have a successful, healthy business, you have to be doing different things, putting out content, you know, collaborating mm-hmm. with people, doing a pop-up, you know, maybe a little bit out of your area to get people into your area, or testing a new market, which is, by the way, that's a big shortcoming, I think, of small business owners. They don't do enough testing, which is that's what attracted me to you to begin with. I'm like, wow, pop-up expert, like that's a way to kind of test your business and not
absolutely.
You know, spend a lot of money. And I think a lot of people, they just, you know, they have a whole big wad of cash and they blow it because this is what they think they should do. And
they
were way off the mark as to what the customers wanted and what the marketplace wanted. And they could have
tested it
for a very little amount of money.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I would say to anybody that is, you know, thinks they've got a retail concept or a product, you know, this is the perfect vehicle for you.
Yeah,
really is. And because you can, you know, you can literally do it anywhere. If you find the right location, just because you're in Chicago, you don't have to do it in Chicago. You can go and test it in Michigan. You can go and test it in Arizona.
Right.
You know, that's the flexibility that you get with it, which is perfect. Yeah.
And I think don't be so in love with your idea to not test it. Because if somebody told you, I know you're in love with your idea, but it's going to fail in 6 months. And there you go. They wouldn't be so in love with their idea.
No.
They still want to be successful.
So here's one of the things that I'm always on at people about, not just in retail. I do some work with people in retail technology as well. Mm-hmm. And that's get the product out there, right? Stop over-developing it. Stop over-analyzing it. Stop trying to make it the best it can be.
Right.
If it's technology, get the MVP out there as quickly as you can, because that's the best feedback you're ever going to get. You'll get all those early adopters that love it and will take you on the journey. And you'll get all the people that will tell you what was wrong with it, but still want you to do something with it. And the same is with retail. You'll get that feedback from consumers. You'll know if you've got, you're selling solar panels. You'll know if your salesmen are great because they're going to be getting leads. You'll know if the product's great because once they've got the leads, they're going to be selling, they're going to be making the sales. So it's the perfect vehicle for that. Get it out to market.
Right.
Try it, experiment with it, and then make decisions based on that.
Yeah, because that does a lot of the work for you, right? Absolutely. You don't have to keep guessing and trying to build and improve when the people are going to do it for you anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Because if you're off the market, they're going to bring you back to zero, and you got to use that ahead of time. And I think, a lot of people miss that. I get a lot of business owners that come to me 6-8 months in, they have a retail store or whatever, and they're like, I think we're going to close the doors. I'm like, why? Didn't you just start? We just opened. Yeah, but they didn't anticipate this. They didn't test this. It was the wrong location. It was the wrong time of year. The supplier had a problem. They were whatever it was. And they could have kind of tested it along the way and maybe not avoided all these problems, but solved them within their budget. So what they did was they just went all out, and then they were too thinly capitalized and they weren't able to survive those kind of unanticipated things.
Yeah. Yeah. Listen, in terms of supply chain, there's problems with supply chain across every.
Especially now. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, right. But again, here, this is the advantage of pop-ups, that if you can only get inventory that's going to sustain you for 3 months, why do you need a store for 12? Just do it. Make the cash. Invest the cash in the next set of inventory or the next thing that's new. And then, find the right location for that and then go and open that.
Yeah.
It's great. If you're a failing retailer right now and you can get out of your lease and you've got the inventory, go and do a pop-up to sell that inventory, because what else are you going to do with it?
Right. Well, a lot of people, it's in their basement. There's money sitting there. They can liquidate it. Just get rid of it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, right. Steve, I can't thank you enough for spending the time with me. I guess it's probably an hour earlier there, right? It's 10 to 3 there. Here it's 10 to 2 there.
Yeah, 10 to 2 here. Yeah, in Chicago.
Yeah, a little bit earlier. Well, I'm heading out your way Sunday. I got to bring my son back to school. He's in Indianapolis, so he's still Eastern time zone, but a lot closer to Chicago. So I'll be out your way. But I do appreciate it, all your advice, and we'll put links in the show notes so people can get in touch with you and learn about you and read, follow you on LinkedIn and learn from all your stuff. And then, maybe use the pop-up strategy to, help improve their business.
Yeah, yeah. I'm here. That's what I'm here for. Thanks, Steve, so much for having me on. Really enjoyed it, Mitch. Thank you.
If you like the podcast, please tell others about us. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, on Amazon Music, and many of the other podcast directories. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review and feel free to share our episodes on social media. If you have any questions or comments, ideas for the show, or you'd even like to appear as a guest, reach out to us by email at info@beinhackerlaw.com. The Accidental Entrepreneur is hosted and produced by me, Mitch Beinhacker. If you'd like more information about my legal services, you can find me on social media or visit my website at beinhackerlaw.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe to our feed to be notified of all future episodes.